are the backbone to our podcast.
I don't know if backbone's the right word. I would like to be like the... No?
What's that part? Oh, appendix.
I'm the lower intestines of the podcast.
Equally important.
Oh, like I have to come up with a body part.
Well, that's what backbone is.
Right. Well, I know. But I was thinking like...
Yeah, keep going. It's great.
What were you thinking?
Welcome back.
Like the steer. Like I was thinking more like a boat. Like steering it back on
rudder?
Course. Yeah, that.
I don't think you're the rudder that keeps us on course.
I think sometimes I might be.
Well, viewers, you'll have to let us know. Listeners,
when
viewers.
When Patrick was gone, we were way more off course than when you were gone.
Okay, maybe Patrick does.
So you're the backbone. I'm the rudder.
You could be like
this animal.
You could be.
What kind of animal are we?
An animal with a rudder and a backbone.
A vertebrate. So we're narrowed it down. Welcome back.
It's so good to be back
to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This Woo. Is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How you doing, Patrick?
And Katie Phillips.
Hello, Patrick.
We are back in the studio. It's been a while.
It has. Feel like it's been a long, too long.
Too long.
Yes. Too long.
Yeah. Well, you know, a day without recording is too long.
Yeah.
It's been 2 weeks for Katie.
Maybe three
weeks.
Three. Oh, yeah. Right, because we did some advanced recording.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Three
behind
weeks.
Behind the podcast magic, we did some advanced Ooh, recording. And so it's been a long time since we've been together, but here we are.
I know, yay.
Welcome back. It's good to see you all.
The boys.
I know.
Did you guys have a good 4th of July?
We did.
We did.
Yeah. Do anything exciting or
overly
patriotic?
We had people
patriotic?
Over. And
we hold hands and
we do not, did you
talk
stop
about America.
With the holding hands and the Thanksgiving thing. Our new listeners are going to have no idea what you're talking about. Go
you
back
can
to
go
the
back
Thanksgiving
and listen to our
episode.
Thanksgiving podcast. Yeah, that's a good one.
So my husband learned on YouTube how to make his own aerial fireworks display.
Excellent.
Okay, now, when you say aerial, are you saying Little Mermaid or in the air? Because Little Mermaid's in the news right now.
It is in the news right now, but no, I'm talking about in the air. In the air.
Okay.
So,
don't most fireworks have their own aerial display built in?
Isn't that
what
they
launch
into the air?
Otherwise, it's just a bomb.
Okay, so let me just tell you. So, there was woodworking involved with a crate.
Sure.
And there were professional-grade... tubes purchased, and there was extra fuse purchased.
What's a professional
and,
grade?
So you can reuse
like
them over
pipe?
And over again.
Yeah.
No,
so like
it
can shoot it upwards without it just going.
Right, it doesn't
outward,
explode.
Yeah.
Okay. So like what you would buy at the fireworks stand
as
is
opposed
like,
to that's like
a
cardboard
paper toilet.
Right.
Yeah,
this is like a sturdier whatever. Okay. So it can be reused. There were
not professionals.
There were 72 aerial fireworks things fused together.
Yeah.
That you lit one fuse and then they all just went off in a row.
That's awesome.
And it was awesome.
Did you record it?
No. He asked me that. And he was like, I wanted to be in the moment. Like, I wanted to see it. I don't want to, like, see it through my phone.
Nobody records. Nobody ever watches those things.
And I go, did you want me to record it? He goes, yeah, kind of. And I was like, ugh. So.
Now you got to do it again next year.
Well, the plan is every July 4th and New Year's.
Okay.
It will be happening. And it will just grow.
So
each time.
This whole fireworks on New Year's is still a weird thing for me because I'm used
that's
to...
That's not a thing for Dayton?
No, because in Dayton it's like, you know, freezing and snowy.
Yeah.
Like, you don't shoot
right.
fireworks. Like, no one wants to stand outside at midnight.
Oh,
know?
No, we do. And it was cold last 2 years ago.
On the 4th of July?
No.
Never?
Yes. No.
All right. Let's get to this.
Anyway, 4th of July was great. Thanks for asking.
I've got some news for us.
I like asking questions.
Katie! Oh, mid sip.
Mid coffee sip.
Did you just burn your tongue?
No.
No. Oh,
but
just
it almost
excited.
Went down the wrong pipe.
Ooh.
Let me just tell you, a rudder would not be drinking coffee while the news is being said.
That's right.
So, all right. New report here.
He's the rudder.
Selfies are now 5 times as more deadly than shark attacks.
Oh, car accidents, I bet.
You are far more likely to die taking a selfie than from a shark.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm more likely to die doing a lot of things than by a shark, because, you know...
Shark attacks are less likely than you'd think they are.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
once
Jaws
a year?
Than Jaws would have you believe.
No, more than once a year. I mean, sharks are scary because of Jaws, but... from October 2011 to November 2017, 259 people died taking selfies around the globe, compared to just 50 people killed by sharks in the same
period. There you go. I want to know how those 259 people died.
Guarantee you.
There are top three ways that people died. I will let you guess the top three ways that people died taking a selfie.
I hate to believe that a car could be on there. I mean, it's a possibility. But I hate
that they take pictures of the
car. I think they like are trying to take a selfie and fall off, like back up and fall off a cliff.
Okay,
or
I will tell you. Number two.
Katie's that is terrifying.
Well, so, I'm not. That's why I'm not doing it. But you
so
know
number
how many
two
are trying to get the
is
angle?
Transportation based.
Okay.
So
okay.
A car will be in that. And number three is falling.
All right.
So you're missing the top one way people die taking a selfie.
Wait, let me think.
Are they taking a selfie with a firearm and the firearm goes off?
No. I mean, I'm sure that happens, but that is not the top three. Yes.
Are they... So wait, transportation, does that mean they're taking a selfie and they get hit by something, or they are...
Just anything involving...
Are they catching something on fire?
No.
How would you catch something on fire while taking
I don't know,
selfie?
Like... I don't know. Like, look what I'm doing. I'm cool. I don't know.
Okay. Are they attacked by another animal while taking a selfie?
No, they're not. But that does happen as well. All right, I'll give it to you. Okay. We're going nowhere here. It is drowning.
Wow.
And probably similar to falling. And that's where they fall into water and then drown.
Yep.
Yes, but there have been multiple instances at the...
That's number one?
At the Grand Canyon of people trying to get the perfect selfie and falling in.
Jeez.
When you die of the fall?
Yes.
Well, at the Grand Canyon, yeah.
Well, the Grand Canyon, yes. But the other places you fall into the water. Yes. Have you ever taken a dangerous selfie?
No.
No.
Have you ever taken a selfie, Katie?
Yes.
I've taken a selfie. Taking one right now.
Yes. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
I can't say that I have ever felt like I'm risking my life or the lives of others in order to get a selfie.
What do you think?
Though, I will say we were recently at Walt Disney World, and we stopped... in like on Main Street to get a picture of my wife and my daughter and I with the castle in the background.
Uh-huh. For sure.
There was a moment where I felt like my life was in peril just because everybody was like rushing to get through. And it's like, you know, you stop for 2 seconds and everybody's like, nope, you're just going to trample you. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, sure. There's no room for this.
We don't Disney related selfie is probably number four.
This is very close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. What do you think motivates people to risk their lives
vanity
for a selfie? Vanity.
Mm-hmm. Scenery.
They just do it for the gram.
They do it for the gram. Yeah. It's all about getting those likes.
Well, no, I'm thinking like all now about they're on top of likes. A cliff, like that view better is like probably
all
like,
about
cool.
Getting those likes.
Yeah, well, you could take a picture without you being in it.
That's true.
Yeah, but then how did they
but then
know
how do you
know
took
that
you it? Were there?
How do you know you were there?
How do you know? How do you know?
Yeah. I gotta be in it. I gotta have the proof. There's a show that I like. I don't even remember what show
the
it was.
British Baking Show.
No, it's not that. But it's called Newsroom. That was the name of the show. It's called Newsroom. And this person was working in a news studio, and they got in trouble because they tweeted this like really offensive thing on account of the studio. And when asked why they tweeted it, they're like, "I wanted the retweets." I think that's a real thing. Like, it didn't matter that this thing was offensive and that they knew it was inappropriate. They're like, it's all about getting the retweet. And I think that captures an essence of our culture as well. Like, it's all about the likes.
It's all about the likes.
Getting,
yeah,
getting other people to know what I'm doing.
Yeah, this will probably not shock or surprise you, but even though most women are taking selfies, young men are responsible for the most deaths from selfies.
That's because we're stupid.
They're prone to take more risks, is what it says. Like, they're prone to climb on top of things or get in more dangerous places for the cool selfies.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, have you guys seen those like YouTube videos of people like climbing really dangerous things? Like,
oh my gosh.
Probably highly illegal, but like, like free climbing, ridiculous buildings.
And they're having heart palpitations as I'm watching. I'm like, this isn't even me.
Right.
And I'm like,
how many idiots see them doing that as professionals who probably did it with like a closed course and safety things or whatever, and they're like, oh, I can do this, and then they fall.
For sure. And I genuinely like watching like GIFs of people falling over.
Right.
I will laugh. I'm America's Home Videos original.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to see anybody get real hurt or certainly not die.
America's Funniest Home Videos does not involve death or dismemberment. It's just a swift kick to the individual.
But a person slipping on ice,
always funny.
I'm in it.
So that still plays. Like, America's Funniest Videos is still on.
Yeah.
And I had my kids watch it with me for the first time a couple months ago. And they were like glued to it. And they're like, oh my gosh. And like Shane's laughing hysterically. I said, see, this is what we had before YouTube. This is what
pretty
we watched.
This is our YouTube.
Yes. We have a group chat with our youth group here, and I often put in there GIFs of people falling down. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my announcements of like, we're doing this, and I have somebody falling down.
Right. Yep. That's awesome.
Yep. All right, let's get to our real story today.
All right.
All right, so we're going to talk today about persecution.
I feel like Patrick's persecuting me right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I found an article from The Intercept. I was.
I thought you were saying like internet in a weird way.
Intercept. No, my printer messed up here, and the article title of the newspaper and the headline are kind of printed on top of one another. So
excellent.
It was a little tough to get in there.
So
but
the,
from the Intercept,
the
yes.
Intercept is the title of the paper?
Yes, and I believe it is a paper from England.
Ooh.
So,
okay.
It's across the pond.
Should we talk in an English accent?
No, we should definitely not. Yeah, and this is from a Muslim guy,
okay.
Mehdi Hassan,
okay.
Who will identify as Muslim and left-leaning politically.
Okay.
And he's going to make an argument. The headline of this is, when Christians are under attack, Muslims and the left need to defend them.
Okay, so he is a left-leaning,
Muslim.
Liberal-leaning Muslim in England.
Correct.
And his headline is that when Christians are being persecuted, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, when Christians are being persecuted, then the Muslim community and the liberal left-wing community needs to step up to protect them.
Correct.
Okay. Just making sure that I followed that.
They're right there.
Because I got confused by the Intercept.
So I'll give you kind of, this is a stinger here that I think is probably pretty important. He says, I'm a Muslim and I consider myself to be on the left, but I'm embarrassed to admit that in both Muslim and left circles, the issue of Christian persecution has been downplayed and even ignored for far too long.
Okay.
So what are your responses to these things, kind of off the bat, before we get into kind of the his bones of his article and kind of some of the other data that I have here?
I think that's really interesting.
Sure.
Like, super interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how many times Christians say when Muslims are being persecuted or when the political party that I don't agree with are being persecuted that I should defend them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that was my first thought. Like,
sure.
How many times am I saying that as a Christian? That I should defend other religions and defend other people when he's very boldly saying that if, you know, Christians are under attack, we should protect them or defend them.
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting.
I think that's a major critique of left-leaning Christians in the United States that I hear often is that they're more willing to protect the rights of others than they are to protect the rights of themselves. Or not themselves, but to protect people that are similar to them,
sure.
I think. And I think there's good reason for that in the United States often, which we might get into in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for this guy to kind of call out people that it sounds like he would agree with, right? So that he's kind of calling out his own group. I think that's an important voice to have. I think too often we get that insider mentality of, well, this is my group, so I can't say anything bad about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we end up, you know, kind of radicalizing ourselves in both directions rather than having honest critiques of ourselves and saying, what can we be doing better and more helpfully?
Yeah, and I think it's hard, and I think he's going to get into this, is that we here in the West, in the United States, will have two different views of Christian persecution.
Sure.
We have a kind of a worldwide Christian persecution that can seem very far and distant, and then we have the Christian persecution, whether it happens or not, within our own tribe, in our own nation.
In the United States,
In the United States. So that is at least closer and louder. So we have both those things kind of going on at once. And I think probably, and he'll, in his article, is going to get into, like, both those things are going on for him as well, as being part of a Western nation, that there's global persecution happening, and then there's also the cries of persecution from the Western nations.
Right.
And sometimes that can drown out the other.
Sure.
We'll take a look at some of his stats here. So I found this interesting. He does say, like, worldwide right now, Christianity is the most persecuted faith community in the world.
Okay.
They are harassed and targeted in 144 countries, and Muslims in 142. The Jewish population in 87. And he'll say 11 Christians a day are dying due to worldwide global persecution.
Wow.
And this happens, the most common countries in the world that Christian persecution is happening are North Korea, India, Saudi Arabia, China, you know, probably Eastern to Middle Eastern countries.
Right.
That's where the majority of it takes place. And so what do we think? You know, when I was a kid, in high school, I got a book written by, like, DC Talk. Do you know who they are?
Mm-hmm.
Like a Christian rap rock band called Jesus Freaks, based off one of their songs, Jesus Freak. And it was a book about basically martyrs.
Yeah.
And had detailed stories of martyrdom worldwide. And it was a powerful book to read as a teenager, and really interesting to see these are things that Christians experience globally. And these things are happening. I mean, this article is a few months old. It was written in April as a response to, like, the bombings over Easter. in, where was that here? Just want to make sure. Sri Lanka. And he's saying, this happens often. This is not the first Easter bombing, an Easter attack that's happened by religious extremists on Christians. All right, so how, let's stop here for the worldwide community, because I want to talk about this. How can we in the West, or what do we need to do in the West to draw more attention or better understanding of what's going on for our global brothers and sisters?
I think for me that's hard because I don't know what to do. I think that's the problem. And I feel so far removed. Like, I'll feel, oh, that's really sad. Or, like, I can't believe that happened. Like, that's awful. But then what? Like, I don't do anything about it. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I think that's where I struggle and I get stuck. It's like, I'm really sad that that happened, but that's so far away. I'm not going to fly there to, like, you know, go do anything right at the minute.
Sure.
You know, the moment it happens.
Yeah.
So I kind of just get lost in the, okay, that's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's so immediately politicized, too. I mean, we see that, and you know, then it comes down to, well, is this a country that the United States is friendly with or not? Or is this a you know, a government, maybe even that the United States is friendly with or not? And so that becomes complicated. You know, I think we also have this challenge of, with our, you know, denominational divisions within the Christian church, you know, is this, are these Catholic churches that are being persecuted?
Sure.
Are these Lutheran churches that are being persecuted? And so I think one of the things that we should be doing in our congregations, outside of a political sphere, just in our congregations, I think we should be talking more intentionally about the legitimate struggles and persecutions that our Christian brothers and sisters are facing in the world. And we should be praying for people who are in those places, because certainly we want to be praying for... you know, we want to be praying for our Christian brothers and sisters to be safe and to be protected. I mean, that's certainly a godly thing to do. We should be, you know, talking about the situations that they're facing, and maybe we should be, you know, developing global partnerships that allow us to have a way to respond to these situations. You know, we, as the Gulf Coast Synod here, as this kind of region of Lutheran churches, we have partners both in Peru and in Congo, I think a part of the Congo. I don't remember what... Is it the Democratic Republic of the Congo? I think that's the official name currently. And so those are our partner areas. And we do a lot of great work with Peru, and it's been harder for us to do work with Congo for this very reason, because of the civil war and strife and persecution and things of those natures. And so it's tough, and I think there's a lot of thing that we can do. I think there are a lot of simple steps that we could take just to make ourselves more aware of the reality of persecution that is being faced worldwide.
Yeah, I think I mean, I'd like to respond to both those things. So I think you both brought up some very interesting parts here. Like, have you ever watch the movie like Hotel Rwanda?
Yeah.
So it's about a Rwandan genocide that happens, and one man played by Don Cheadle, who's kind of a hotel manager, does a part to kind of help prevent genocide and hiding people in the hotel. It's a pretty powerful story. It's really neat.
And it's all based on a true story.
Based on a true story. And one of the neat things is there's two American journalists there. And they are filming part of this, and Don Cheadle's character is like, thank goodness. Because now the news will get out to the world, and the West will do something about this. People will come and help. And the cameraman, played by, I think, Joaquin Phoenix?
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yes.
I would not have been able to tell.
Is it Joaquin, though? That's an interesting name.
Yeah, it's the guy who played Johnny Cash.
Yeah. I just don't know if that's how you pronounce his name.
I think that's right.
But anyway, he tells him and says, like, look, this is what's going to happen. People are going to watch this footage while they're eating their dinners and say, that's a tragedy. Somebody should do something. And then go back to eating their dinners.
Yeah.
And that's probably what oftentimes we sometimes can do. Say, that's a tragedy. Someone should do something. But it's so far away.
Yeah.
And it's so it's hard to in any way identify or personalize. And I don't think that means necessarily that we're just selfish human beings, because I think sometimes when the tragedy is close, people can rise up in communities to take care of one another in like a hurricane, in a tornado, in a devastating situations that happen nearby. But it being far away is hard. And so the way to make that closer is to talk about it more, is to have those conversations where we discuss this is what's going on.
Yeah,
and at least be acknowledging those things, because I don't really ever talk about these things.
Right.
Yeah,
I think you can even point back to, you know, the United States involvement in World War II, right? We like to think, oh, we went into you know, end the concentration camps. We knew that persecution of Jews was going on for years before we got involved in the war. It was Pearl Harbor that got it. You know, it was making it personal where we had a personal stake in it that said, okay, now we have no choice but to be involved in this.
And I do think, and then the next part is to stop politicizing.
Yeah.
So we stop identifying what does this mean for us as Americans and start thinking what does this mean for us as a Christian global community.
Right.
And that does change things. I mean, I think even like, and I don't want to get into this, but like even our situation at the border, we can say, those many of the people coming across our border are Christians.
Yep.
And what is my duty as a Christian brother and sister to love and care for them, or as an American citizen to protect my country's border?
Yeah.
Which one of those two things trump the other?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and I don't want to get into what's going on the border, but...
That's another episode.
That's another topic for another time. But I think that does get into the problem. Like, when we talk about... Sometimes, often, when we talk about the Sri Lanka bombing of Christian churches there, it's more used as an attack on Islam extremism more than a protection of Christians.
Yes.
And I think that that's part of it.
Especially when it's been politicized, right?
Yes.
You know, so when we hear about that from a political realm, it's always, well, who are the perpetrators and how are they enemies of the United States and what are we doing to protect ourselves from them, as opposed to, you know, us as a church or us as people of faith saying, hey, these are our brothers and sisters. What do we need to do?
Yeah. How can we help and support?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, if we look biblically at the stories of martyrs, you know, particularly in the story or in the book of Acts, where we hear of Stephen and others who are martyred or who are arrested or things like that, at no point in the biblical stories do they take express actions to protect one another from that. They accept that it's going to be a part of their faith. They accept that following Jesus is going to mean some of them will die, some of them will be arrested, and that's a reality, and it's okay because God is greater and bigger than stronger than all of this. And so they don't try, I mean, there are lots of things they could have done to stop that from happening or prevent that from happening, and instead they continue to go out in the street day after day proclaiming Jesus. And I don't know, that's just an interesting...
Yeah, it's way more about the biblical spiritual heroism of the people being martyred and less about the enemy that is doing the martyr.
Right.
Yep. It's much more focused that way. Well, I'm going to move on here because
sure.
I think he raises another interesting point. A second point that I think is in some ways more interesting than the first.
Okay.
And that's why. Why
do we ignore it?
Why do, especially, he would say, is Muslims and the left particularly are ignoring this.
Mm-hmm.
And so first he says, as a Muslim, you know, maybe we don't want to draw attention to this because a lot of the persecution is happening in Muslim countries.
Sure.
And we don't want to give the West another stick to beat us with. Mm-hmm. We don't want to, you know, open our mouths just to have it shoved back in our face. And then he'll say, and I think this is most interesting, that sometimes it's easy for the left and to see Christian persecution as a little bit of they had it coming. Because they're not experiencing the Christianity that's going on in poor parts of our world or different parts of our world. They're experiencing the Christianity that's going on in the West. And they see a Christianity that they associated with, and he'll say this, popes and armies, crusades, inquisitions, anti-Semitism, British imperialism, Trump supporters and abortion protesters. These are his words.
Yeah.
And he says, they cry persecution at every minor run-in with the law here in the West, and so it's hard to take real persecution around the globe seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is another part of it. Why maybe sometimes worldwide persecution takes a back seat in our minds is because oftentimes we're focused in on these infractions happening in our own backyard and debating on, is it even persecution here? We're having those conversations and not how can we solve persecution worldwide.
I mean, we've had that conversation on the podcast before.
Sure.
I mean, we've talked about, you know, is this really persecution? Is this really what we're expecting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I have a study here.
Okay.
This is from Pew.
Pew
Research. Yes. And they did a discrimination study here in the United States. And this is from 2 years ago. So, you know, take it for what it was. But I think the data probably is still overlapping. And they've looked at religious groups in the United States, Christians and Muslims, who might face persecution.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so most of the population will identify as Muslims here in the United States are more persecuted than Christians, except one specific demographic, and that would be white evangelical Protestants. They would say 57% of them said there's more persecution against Christians today, and then only 40% will say that the same level of persecution is happening for Muslims. Hmm. And in the stats here, we'll just go through all the stats here. Here in the United States, 22% of religiously motivated crimes are against Muslims, and then 13% are against Catholics, Protestants, and other Christian denominations. But Muslims make up 1% of the population. Christians make up 70% of the population.
Sure, so 22%.
Against 1%.
Of religiously motivated crimes are against Muslims.
Correct.
And 13%, you said, are against Christians of a variety of backgrounds. So that only gets us to 35%.
It doesn't go into what happens after that. Okay. So I can't tell you.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of percentages. I'm like, what are these other religiously motivated crimes that are happening? Anyway, sorry. Off topic. Back on.
Yeah, and I guess religiously motivated, I think, it can be both two ways. One, the religion of the perpetrator, and also the religion of the person who's doing the act.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, but Muslims are getting 22% of the crime against them.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, which is far worse than Christians are getting against them. All right, so what do we think about this? This idea that part of what makes it hard to focus in on persecution worldwide is that, man, Christians in the West just cry persecution at a lot of things.
Yeah, I definitely, I experience this and I see this in conversations that I have with people, you know, where we talk about, you know, the realities that we're facing in our communities, and it comes back to the ways that, you know, they're perceiving their own suffering. And I don't want to downplay someone's suffering, right? Because there are a lot of ways in which what we would have called the middle class once upon a time, or perhaps we would have called like blue collar America, or kind of the heartland, right?
Sure.
There are a lot of ways in which they have suffered greatly in the past 20 years, you know, economically. You know, there have been promises that have been made that have not been kept. There have been all sorts of things that just have not helped America move forward as a cohesive unit, right? We've moved forward, and some have really succeeded, and others have really borne the burden of that. And what we see, you know, what we see economically and religiously is as certain groups gain, there's always going to be some take from some others, right? There's finite number of resources. Mm-hmm. That's the way the world works. And so as we are genuinely trying to lift up some of the poorest in our community and those who are struggling the most, the people who are most directly affected are the people who are typically closer to that group, right? So the top 1-5% of American wage earners are not the ones who are going to dramatically experience an effect of helping get the poor out of poverty. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the lower middle class who are going to experience that effect. And so I think that has bled over into our faith to say, you know, that we've united ourselves with these religious bonds with one another, and we've seen this common struggle. And so we've said, or we've taken it to mean that all of this is against Christianity. And so we point to, well, you know, government isn't allowing us to do this religious thing anymore, or we're not supposed to pray in schools anymore, or, you know, they don't want us to say that we're one nation under God anymore. And we point to all these things that are really separate from they're separate from a physical or a literal persecution, but they are a way in which Christianity as a whole is being separated from the government.
Sure.
And so we perceive this separation of the church and state, we perceive that, I think, sometimes as persecution. And so that allows us to then view everything that happens against us as a religiously motivated persecution.
And I think this is all a very personal opinion. Like, this is one person... What am I trying to say?
I don't know. That's why we're here.
to give your personal
right?
opinion.
No. Right, but I think that is on a very personal level, because what I see as Christian persecution, what somebody else sees as Christian persecution, I might not feel that way, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But and
go ahead. I shouldn't interrupt.
No, you're fine. I think there are sometimes more serious versions of Christian persecution, and we're playing in this little area sometimes, not to make anybody feel upset or that their reasoning, their what they feel as Christian persecution isn't important. Same thing you were talking about as far as suffering, like when you suffer, that's not to, you know.
Sure.
I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, I understand what you're saying. Well, I think people may very well feel that they are being persecuted for their faith here in the United States.
Right.
I personally, from my vantage point, feel they are not.
Right. I mean, if you're going to another country.
Many of the things that I hear, whether that's Starbucks cups don't say Merry Christmas, whether that Best Buy says Happy Holidays.
You aren't being killed because you believe in Jesus.
Yeah.
Like that, there are different levels to me of persecution. Me going and complaining that the Starbucks cups aren't, you know, Merry Christmasing, and nope, not everybody's saying Merry Christmas. To me, that's, I mean, yes, it to some degree it is persecution, but I'm not dying. I can still walk over.
I don't even think that's persecution at all.
Right.
Well, I know, but
I think it's silly. But I think that does.
But I understand that there was a point in time where we were praying in schools, and so
here's the thing, right? I mean, there was a time when we were doing that, and throughout that time, the intention of the United States had always been to provide a place where people of all backgrounds and all religious beliefs could live next door to one another and coexist, right?
Right.
That is in the founding documents. And there are certainly Judeo-Christian values that are in our founding documents, but alongside of those Judeo-Christian values is the value of living alongside your neighbor and allowing one another to have individual beliefs. And so, just as we were talking about a few moments ago, right, you know, there's a limited number of resources. Freedom itself is a limited resource. And in order for other people to have more freedom, right, for someone who is a Jewish or Muslim or non-faith to have the freedom of not being forced to pray in school or not being forced mm-hmm. to express a belief that they do mm-hmm. not have, someone else has to lose some freedom.
Right.
And yeah. what we have had is a wealth of freedom as Christian Protestants in particular mm-hmm. in the United States. We've had a wealth of freedom, and suddenly that freedom is being a little bit more evenly distributed, and it hurts a little bit. It's like we're losing an income because suddenly I don't have the ability to do the thing I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Is that the same as persecution? I think it's living into the American ideal of coexisting with a plurality of backgrounds and religious faiths coexisting together. It might not be the Christian ideal, but I do think it's a piece of the American ideal. And again, this comes back to what Patrick was talking about. Which one are we going to lift up, right? Which ideal are we living into?
And I think that this starts the conversation of, but aren't we as Christians in this country being founded in Christianity? I hear this a lot from people.
Mm-hmm.
That as Christians, isn't our call to go and make disciples and to bring all of these people to Christianity? Is that
sure.
Okay, so this is where I think it gets a little hairy.
Keep going, I'll let you finish.
I'm just thinking, you know, we take all of this Christian stuff away because we're allowing other people to have their beliefs, and I'm not going to make somebody else pray in school to God who doesn't believe in God or my God. You know what I'm saying? I'm just being the devil's advocate. I'm not saying...
I do have a response to that.
Okay.
I know you go off the front seat, but I do have a response. So one, the privilege that Christianity's experienced has been taken away, and I think that can feel like persecution. It's mm-hmm. a little like if you have an only child and a new baby enters the picture, some of those privileges that child experienced go away.
Yep.
Right.
The attention from mom and dad, the level of toys, the level of finances, they just go away. They mm-hmm. cannot be there for the sake of raising another sibling.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is.
For sure.
Sometimes it can feel that way. Like, we were the only child, we had everything that we wanted,
mm-hmm.
and now there's other children.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the resources are going towards them. And so, but I think society, our culture, was making the decision for all of us
mm-hmm.
that we were a Christian society, whether or not people were or weren't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so now what's happening is it's less the culture surrounding us is deciding that we're all Christian, and now it's individually we're deciding whether or not we're Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think this is a better way for Christianity to thrive in America because it's more I'm making this decision to follow
mm-hmm.
Jesus
mm-hmm.
versus I'm just being raised in a society that's assuming I already am.
Right.
And I think that is a better way for Christianity to grow. But it does mean it's going to take a step back. And it might take a step in a different direction. Christianity may never have the privileged, the biggest plate at the buffet anymore.
Right.
But it means every person who is choosing to follow Jesus is choosing it for personal reasons, not because society has chosen it for them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's better for us
mm-hmm.
as a faith.
And whether or not the employee at Best Buy wishes me Happy Holidays or wishes me a Merry Christmas, does not impede my ability as a Christian to live out my faith and share that faith with others in a way that allows them to experience the love of Christ, right?
It doesn't impede yours, but I guarantee you there are some Christians out there who it does, like it does, like it makes them have like a twinge of...
No.
Like, do you know what I'm saying?
That having a twinge is not this, like, there is nothing about someone else wishing any person a happy holiday that prevents that person from expressing their own faith. Right? If another person says to me, mm-hmm. happy holidays, mm-hmm. there is nothing that sure. they have done that prevents...
Absolutely. I agree. I'm the same way. Like, if somebody says happy holidays to me, I'm like, oh, Merry Christmas, and I walk out. I mean, it is what it is. However, I think sometimes Christians get wrapped up, so wrapped up in that happy holidays that it makes... sometimes their behavior is not... does not come out as the best Christian behavior.
Sure.
And therefore... Mm-hmm. is giving all Christians this name
right.
of this
but,
is how...
But they're...
So this is probably going in a different direction.
No, that's
where
okay.
we want to go. But
we can go in any direction. So, free-flowing.
Says the rudder. someone's personal inability or personal choice to handle a situation in that way mm-hmm. does not mean that it's... God, does not mean it's reality. That sounds way too harsh. That's not what I intend to say. Mm-hmm. But it's like saying... Well, I'm making a choice to act this way, so here's the reason I'm choosing to act this way. But that is not the cause, mm-hmm. right? It's not the cause and effect is not a direct relationship in the way that
sure.
you're describing it. If someone says something to me and I choose to react in an unchristian manner to that, it's not the fault of the person who said. Even if they
right.
said even
Absolutely.
If they said something openly rude, right?
right?
Someone says something openly rude and offensive to
it's
me,
how
I
you're
still
reacting
have a choice in
to
how
that.
I react to
Absolutely.
That. And the same is true of I can choose mm-hmm. to perceive someone saying mm-hmm. happy holidays to me as persecution of my Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Or I can choose to say or to see that someone is saying happy holidays to me because other people are also a part of this society in which I live, and this is an opportunity for me to live out my Christian ideals.
Sure.
I just think that there are certain...
Whether that's saying Merry Christmas or just being nice.
Right, and I think there are certain people out there who are just... They take offense to
sure.
everything that comes their way that is not coming out in a completely Christian light.
I
that's all. I'm not me. Like I'm not one.
No, no,
I'm
no,
just
no.
saying.
I know. And I heard what you're saying.
That there are people out there who are just taking offense to everything.
And I think
when you tell me happy holidays, I'm mad. When
but,
you tell
but,
me like.
But here's the thing. I think I agree with you completely. There are people who feel that way, who get mad when they hear these things, but people get mad when the opposing team scores on them in football.
Right.
That does not mean their anger is necessarily justified, right, or reasonable.
For sure. But I think that they're making up some of this.
Oh,
I'm being
for sure.
persecuted
yeah.
because I don't agree that they just told me happy holidays. Yeah. Therefore, I...
Sure.
That's not the same level of persecution as a church being blown up in
for sure.
Sri Lanka.
But I think
I mean,
that this is giving us actually, I think, a good
Sorry.
Example of what's actually going on in this article and these idea. Because we, as the three of us, are speaking much more passionately, emphatically, and we're bringing a lot more emotion into this idea on whether or not somebody can say happy holidays at a Best Buy versus when we talked about global persecution and 11 Christians are dying
right.
every day.
Right.
Because this is what we experience, and this is what we
right.
feel every day. And this is what our society around us is hearing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the conversation of can public companies choose to disengage with a Christian perspective? And that's what we're debating on. I've had far more debates with my friends and family over, is it okay for a guy to bake a cake for a gay wedding than what can we do about people in Sri Lanka who are getting blown up for worship
right.
on Easter
sure.
morning?
Right.
Like, it's noise.
Yep.
And
yep.
we end up trapped in that noise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that noise does not help our global Christian brothers and sisters. So here's an article from a perspective saying, it's not helping.
Mm-hmm.
We want,
mm-hmm.
like, we're not the... He's saying the left isn't helping, but
yep.
the right isn't helping either.
Right.
Because they're crying persecution
yep.
over the minorest of infractions.
Right.
Things that people on the left and different religions have experienced.
That they're very passionate about and they
yes.
think are they're for sure being persecuted because of this. Like
for sure.
that they're
And I think that this comes from, and I'll try to use here, that in scripture, Jesus is gonna be very clear. By your faith, you will face persecution. You're gonna face hardships
uh-huh.
because of what you believe. And sometimes in the West, it's hard to face hardships because of what you believe,
mm-hmm.
especially when society was making the decision that
right.
we're all Christian.
Right.
And I didn't face any hardships
mm-hmm.
because of my faith, because I assumed everyone agreed with me,
right.
or I knew they didn't.
Right.
And now I'm facing a different resistance, and so it's easy to be like, well, this is the persecution that Jesus talked about. And so I believe Jesus is telling me I'm going to get persecuted, and so I'm going to find it.
Right.
I'm going to seek it out, and I'm going to hear it in, that presidential candidate gave a speech and did not mention God. That's persecution.
Mm-hmm.
Or this presidential candidate gave a speech and did mention God. Therefore, they're on my team and my side, regardless of their individual
right.
beliefs or who they are,
right.
what they are about.
Yep.
So, because I think we're feeling... I believe Christianity is going to be persecuted, and so I will find it here in the United States,
mm-hmm.
whether or not it's accurate or true.
Yep.
Especially in light of what's going on worldwide.
Sure.
So what can we do here in the West to cut through this noise? Do we have any tips or suggestions for all of us to cut through the noise?
I think having honest conversation about those I hate to say legitimate because perhaps it's unfair, but I'm going to use it. Those legitimate places where Christians are being persecuted, having those open conversations, trying to be more aware of how our Christian brothers and sisters are struggling with this every day around the world, and trying to keep things in perspective, right? I think helping one another see that when other people's lives are on the line, that's a different scenario and a different understanding of persecution than what we are experiencing on a day-to-day basis in the United
mm-hmm.
States.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably what it's going to be. And I think it's also for us not engaging in the noise.
Yes.
Yeah.
And saying, you know
yes.
what, I don't really care what a public company does, how they present themselves to the world. It does not really bother me. It doesn't really affect my day-to-day life, and it certainly does not affect how I worship in my church, in my home, and in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I getting so worked up about something that is not truly affecting those things?
Mm-hmm.
And I can still use my platform from where I am to boldly proclaim that I believe in Jesus and I think Jesus
yep.
is good for this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean with a bullhorn or a picket sign or a flyer.
Mm-hmm.
It sometimes just means opening our doors to our neighbors around us.
Yep.
And listening to what they're going through
mm-hmm.
and sharing with them what we think about the world.
I like it.
All right, recommendation time. You got a song for us, Katie?
Nope.
Gosh, Katie.
3 weeks.
Yes.
What have you been doing with your time?
Recommendation time.
I liked it. That's good.
That's
a step in the right direction.
Now you have
to
do it
sure.
every time.
Yes.
Oh, no.
All right.
It's recommendation time.
We already did that.
We already did that. Just because we're cutting back in doesn't mean we need to do it again. I'll do a recommendation.
Okay, great.
Yes. Kat and I went to a movie this week.
Ooh.
Yes, because...
Did you take Timmy?
No, Timmy was watched by grandparents.
Okay.
And so we went to a movie, and we saw Spider-Man Far From Home. And I've already recommended one Spider-Man movie.
You have.
And here comes number two. It's really, really
yeah.
good.
Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yes.
This is the continuation of the Spider-Man from the Marvel Infinity Wars series,
correct.
Right? Yeah, okay.
It does a really great job, I think, of capturing 2019 teen culture.
Ooh.
So it's like a teen comedy for most of the movie.
Okay.
And speaking of somebody who works with teenagers, I can see a lot of our kids in kind of the way that these kids are acting.
Nice.
And they're on like a class field trip in Europe, and we're about to take a trip on a mission trip to New Orleans. And so I'm like, this is a lot of what they're going to be doing and experiencing
yep.
are what our kids do and experience.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
From the relationships that pop up just in this. For this 2 week period while you're on this intense environment, like working at summer camp or on a mission trip, and
right.
then they just dissolve by the end of it. You know,
never to be seen
again. You weren't a teenager? These things happen a lot.
I mean,
yeah.
I was, but not your typical teenager.
You never have a.
The mom.
You never had a teen crush on somebody in your youth group or a camp that you worked
at? That you didn't care about 2 weeks later?
That just ended?
No, because I was in love. That's how I've always been. Like I,
sure.
you know, from Barbies
deeply.
To
sure.
yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like no, I don't forget who they are.
I still love every one of them.
I do. No, I mean
that's simply.
I mean, I do, but not
have a lock
that way.
Of their hair tucked away. For...
But it's really
no, that's weird.
There's some very fun twists and turns in it. And,
okay. Spider-Man: Far From Home.
Spider-Man: Far From Home. Go see it. I think it's really good.
Okay.
In a theater near you.
But where can you find us?
Oh, hey, we are not far from home. In fact, we are everywhere. Ooh. Fine podcasts can be found right on your phone or tablet or computer or on the internet. And you can find us at www.
We're on the internet?
The internet.
Wow.
Not intercept. Even,
we've arrived.
You can intercept us on the internet. www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. And send us an email. Let us know what you think or what you're thinking about this. If you have an opinion on what we've been talking about, we would love to hear from you and engage in that process. So that's an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Great. Well, we will see you all next week.